Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and the planet. I'm your co-host, Scott Patton, along with the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Considering and contemplating how things turn out and why.
Me too. And I'm really looking forward to today's conversation because it hits a whole bunch of things that people, I don't think, really hear about. And I think as you've mentioned to me previously, it's kind of marginalized, but all based on huge amounts of research and science. And if it's inconvenient, the mainstream doesn't really want to talk about it, and that's one of the things that we're going to be doing. We're going to be talking about it today.
I want to tell you something important before we even get into it, and that's this. This topic is really inconvenient because most people like to say, oh, he did it to me, you know, be the victim. Mm-hmm. It's the something else that I cannot control is the fault of wherever I'm at. You know, whether it is my mother never touched me enough, or my father didn't send me to the right school, or my grandmother didn't buy me enough peanut butter, whatever it is, people like to say, it's not me, I can't do a damn thing about it. And I want to say that inconveniently, we're going to stress the point that that's not so.
And you prove it.
You can decide that you can make the change. You can make the change. And that's the responsibility lands squarely in your lap. And it's really sad because I don't mean anyone to feel miserable over the fact that they built themselves a cancer, but they could do differently.
Yeah. Personal responsibility.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to oversimplify because, you know, what is the cause of a 5-year-old child getting leukemia? You know, how did the kid deserve it? He didn't. He got it because of circumstances. Bruce Lipton.
Yeah.
A researcher. Geneticist. He started in the 60s. He's an extremely smart man, well regarded, and you can find him all over the web. I also have some of his articles on my website.
So you called him an geneticist?
Yes. Yeah, epigenetics. As in
EPI-genetics.
Yeah, you know, like epidemiology studies the effects of illness on populations.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Epigenetics studies the effects of genetics, not on individuals, but in general, like on large groups of people. It's like, what's the real predictor of what's going to happen kind of stuff.
Okay, so he would look at, say, the African population and say, okay, this is, you know, they're going to have some different things happening than, say, the Scottish population or the Chinese population.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that sort of thing. But his biggest discovery is this. He says most people think that genes, most people believe that genes are the brains of the cell.
Okay.
But they're not. They're the gonads. The brain of the cell is the cellular membrane. And here's how it unfolds. A gene is to a house. No, gene is to a human body as a blueprint is to a house.
Okay, so this tells you how you're going to have two arms, two legs, a head, couple eyes, all that sort of stuff.
Well, what color eyes, what height ceilings, how many fingers, what width doors.
All the details.
But it's a blueprint.
So it doesn't mean that the house actually looks that way when you're done.
Right.
It's close always.
It doesn't get you a house built. It gets you a house designed.
Oh, okay.
And so what happens is that people believe that this is an erroneous assertion, and this is how the modern medicine is pursuing a phantom, a total nonsense. They're chasing the genes, trying to solve illnesses by understanding the genes.
Oh, so I'm going to try and fix the house by understanding the blueprint.
Right.
So and I'm going some, to... there's some validity to that, because if I'm looking at the blueprint for the wiring and I know the light is not working in the second floor in the bathroom, then that can tell me where all the wires are and I can go fix the wire.
If the builder put it there.
Right.
The way it's on the plan.
Oh, okay. I got a great story I got to tell you related to that.
All right.
As you know, I grew up working for a major grocery chain.
Right? Yes, yes.
And I was in a small town on the upper north coast of British Columbia called Prince Rupert. And I was managing a store there. It was 25 years old. And so they decided in the time that I was there that they were going to pull down that old store and build a brand new store. So they built a new store across the street, which was like, you know, 2.5 times bigger and all the latest and greatest, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that they did in the produce department is they had these little sprinkler systems that would spray water over the cauliflower and stuff, right?
Right, keep it moist, yeah.
But what they had is they had bins that were in the middle of the floor, so not anywhere near a drain, a tap, or even electricity to make the sprinkler sprinkle.
Okay.
So what they had is they had like car batteries that you had to recharge in order to get the sprinklers to work.
Okay.
All right. So they ran for a week and then they ran out of power. So he had extra ones, of course, because you knew that you'd have to switch them back and forth. He switched them, they ran, and he plugged in the worn out batteries, right, the dead batteries, and to recharge them. And so then a week goes by, he takes these recharged batteries, puts them in, and lo and behold, they had no power. So he thinks, this is really funny. So he checks where he plugged them in, and he takes his calculator, plugs the calculator in, no power.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, there's no power there. Right? So he comes to me, I call the electrician. Now, this is the local electrician who may or may not have had very much to do with the building, probably had very little to do with the building of the building originally, which is now like 2 weeks old, right?
Yes.
So he comes in and he goes up there and he says, oh, there's the electric wire and there's the wire to the plug and they're not connected. So he connects. He does what an electrician does, right? Sticks them and he's collected them. Sticks them together and now it's connected and there's power, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he comes to me and he says it was really strange. I guess when they got interrupted or something when they were doing the electrical for that section, they just left it and came back later. Or didn't come back later and meant to. So anyway, I've now attached it. It works.
So when he say attached it, he connected it at the plug or at the panel?
Okay, so the plug, there's a wire from the panel.
Two ends of the wire. One is at the plug side and one is at the panel.
Yeah, so there's a wire coming out of the plug. It's not connected to the wire coming out of the panel.
Okay.
So he connects these two wires, okay? So then my produce guy is really excited. He goes, he plugs everything in to charge up his batteries. And he, you know, it's supposed to be there like 2 days or whatever. So 2 days go by, takes it off, sticks it in, and it's still dead. So we call the electrician because he puts the plug into the
it's dead.
Thing, and the calculator doesn't work, right? So the electrician comes in and he's like,
puzzled,
and then he says, oh, you know, I don't know, like the breaker was flipped or I don't know. Oh, no, they couldn't understand. How exactly did that work? No. Sorry, I got the story slightly wrong. So he realizes that, obviously, because before there was no power in the plug, there must not be power in the plug again, right? So he plugs the calculator in, turns it on, and the calculator almost blows up in his face.
Yes.
Because what had happened was the original electrician had realized that he was at 240 volts.
Yes.
And, of course, it has to go to 120 to go into the plug.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, I've got to get a transformer. I got to get something. And he didn't do it. He left it and then forgot about it. Of course, the electrician comes back 3 weeks later, has no clue that that's what the problem was, just attaches the wire, and now all of a sudden... So what happened with the battery was...
He actually fried the charger, yeah?
No, the charger for the battery was set up so that if you put the wrong amount of voltage in, it just flicked something off so that you wouldn't burn the batteries, right? Because they were expensive.
Okay.
So So we had all this power going through that was, of course, the wrong type of power for...
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, we had 240 wired where 120 is supposed to be.
Where 120 is supposed to be, right? So it was like no looking at any blueprint there would have solved that particular problem.
People make mistakes.
People make mistakes.
So now let's go back to genetics. So genes are activated or not activated. Like, for instance, we have this thing called a stem cell, and a stem cell will become a skin cell, a liver cell, a blood cell, or something, depending on where you put it and what the neighborhood looks like. Same genes, your own stem cells, and the only thing that predetermines what happens with it is the environment in which it is.
Wow.
So now further then, you will activate or not activate certain genetic traits or certain genetic proclivities depending on what you plug them into. And the plugging into are inputs.
Aren't you glad I used the plug example?
Oh, totally. You're guided. I would have said that anyway.
That's so cool.
And so what that is the food you eat and the thought you think, or he thinks.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So you have the ability to remain healthy and never develop the breast cancer that you have the genes for, if you don't do what the genes require for them to be turned on. You will live without manic depression if you don't do what the genes need to be turned on.
The genes that create the blueprint for manic depression, is that what you mean?
The genes are the blueprint. You have the blueprint. You have been born with it. The genes are there.
Oh, okay. The architect
designed you with a circuit for depression.
Right. So what we're saying here, going back to my store example, is we've created the blueprint, and you know, in the blueprint there is a wiring schematic.
Well, let me just try and play with your Safeway. So let's just say that the architect thought that there, where you're now looking at the wire, was supposed to be a massive freezer. Okay,
yeah.
Freezers, massive freezers, and dryers and other devices require 240. That's how you wire them.
Right.
So you would have actually drawn a 240 line to that spot.
Yeah.
But if you don't turn it on, or if you don't plug it in, it will never happen.
Right. So we've got the blueprint, but that doesn't mean that we actually have the action occurring.
That's correct.
Because we have to. This is a very powerful thing that you're talking about.
Oh yeah.
Because we have then the power to make those choices, even though most of us listening to the typical stuff that's being what the average sort of doctor or psychologist would say, you know, you're kind of stuck with that, right?
Yes, you are. That's because they see things as rising from without as opposed to rising from within.
Right.
They see this thing as predetermined by the situations. They give you no control.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool.
which reminds me, you know the difference between God and doctor?
No.
God does not wonder if he is a doctor.
Good one.
So anyway, my wife returned from a doctor not long ago. She went for some help, needed whatever. And she returned back somewhat dissatisfied because essentially the reasoning powers of her doctor were somewhat weak.
Hmm.
And And it was like, I don't remember now the details anymore. But it had to do with, if such and such happens, then this should be the logical outcome, yes? Oh, yeah, that's right, that's how it is. So why are you then contradicting yourself, dear doctor, by telling me that this is not possible when I saw you over here, you said X, and I saw you, see you over here, and now you're saying that X is not the outcome. Anyway, you know, that sort of conversation.
Right.
And we started just discussing the normal situation that exists, which is doctors, just like auto mechanics or electricians in this story, only operate from the manuals that they're handed.
Right, right. And there's so much more to it than that.
Possibly. Or if it's not built according to the manual, or if it's built, or if there's something else going on, right?
So this brings up something we've talked about at great length over the last couple of months, which is metabolic types. We have two manuals. One says you're a meat eater, and the other says you're
A fruit eater.
Yeah. So it's kind of like then taking a Ford into a Toyota shop and they thinking it's a Toyota and doing all the stuff they would do to fix the Toyota to the Ford when we think of that as just absolutely ridiculous. So it would just never work, right?
Yeah. Well, this reminds me of something simpler, just to give you an example. By agreement, for some reason, all nuts and bolts in North America are tightened clockwise and untightened counterclockwise.
Okay.
But that's just by agreement. For instance, with gas tanks, propane gas tanks, they are done in the opposite way, and it's on purpose because they don't want people to screw up, right?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know what I mean other than that you will find some devices here and there that are actually threaded in the opposite direction, opposite orientation. So why am I bringing it up?
Yeah.
Oh, just something is not going to behave as expected.
Oh, right. Okay, so normally we do it this way and take it off, but when it comes to our gas cap, we got to do it the other way to take
right.
it off.
I guess if you're left-handed, you can't play the guitar really well without restringing it.
Right.
So I'm coming up with some goofy ideas just to illustrate the fact that there is really a difference, and if you try and work it the way you would expect, if you would believe that the entire world is right-handed, you pass your right-handed guitar to the left-handed person, and they say, "Well, I can't play this."
Right.
Or left.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a really good way of helping people to look at things differently. Right? It's like we have this blueprint of the body. We know how it's supposed to work, but that doesn't mean that it's actually been created to work that way. It could have been created to work a different way. Like we have a blueprint for a house and we have a blueprint for a office building.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you take the blueprint from the office building and you try to use everything you learn from that on the house,
yes.
it may work in some places, but chances are it will not work in a lot of other places.
Yeah,
right?
Different building codes, different operating rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you get the elevator in the house, right? It's only got one floor. It's a bit of a problem. So how that relates to our health, I think, is pretty brilliant.
Well, the important part is, indeed, Scott, is that we need to understand that, number one, that even though we have this genetic predisposition, and we do, let's just say that both of our parents were, or one of our parents passed on to us this recessive gene that is going to give us the tendency to be depressed, just for an example.
Right.
That does not make us a depressed person. Activating the genes will. And we have to activate them through our behavior. And that behavior, once we understand it, we can change. So if we eat certain things, or if we, you know, like depression depends on you getting not enough sunshine, you living in an electronic soup instead of in a natural environment, you live in an urban setting instead of somewhere where you can watch trees and rivers and other beautiful things every day. And then nutritionally, if you cause your liver to be congested as opposed to flowing freely, or if you repress emotions instead of expressing them, you know, you stuff them instead of letting them flow, soon enough you will build up enough that depression comes along.
Right, right. And that applies equally to other chronic diseases and obesity and other issues that we have in today's society.
Absolutely. Obesity is triggered by acidity. Acidity is triggered by eating against your metabolic type.
Right. Yeah. And so the good news of all of this is?
We can understand the house plans. And we can investigate what we are gifted with, and we could understand how to behave so that we don't trigger the situations that, I don't know, just to give an example, you mentioned the elevator. Well, if, for instance, we had in our blueprint a hole for the elevator shaft in the middle of the house, but then somebody simply just put a sheet of plywood over it, you know, just hit it. We must somehow have some awareness that we don't start some construction changes that will trigger that hole to come open.
Right, right. Because otherwise, so, now we're going down the pit, right?
Yeah, so in the case of our young man who worries us because he has this genetic blueprint for becoming depressed, we must be telling him, these are the behaviors that you must avoid, and these are the behaviors you must engage in. Would you please? But some people still choose to go down into the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and this applies equally to, you know, oftentimes, well, we always say at the beginning of our show, right? Bringing vitality to you and to the planet. So this applies equally on a macro level with the planet.
Uh-huh. That is correct.
There's a blueprint print for how mountains are raised and fields of wheat are put out and oceans are looked after and rain is created and
yes,
volcanoes and everything else.
Yeah.
And we can end up... But that doesn't mean that's exactly how it's going to work out, because we do things that impact that blueprint, right?
Yes, precisely. You know, like we have the basic rules like gravity and speed of light and you know, intensity of the light and elements in the soil and so on, right? But still we get weather.
Yes. And we always get weather.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not, right?
So we're going from static balance to dynamic balance. We discussed that some time ago. You know, dynamic balance is something like two people dancing. Static balance is something like two bronze statues. The difference between life or living and dead, right? Life is based on dynamic balance. It's not based on static balance. Dynamic balance involves something like breathing, you know, inhale, exhale. Static balance excludes breathing altogether.
Right, right.
And so, of course, you know, things like economy are based on dynamic balance, you know, expansion, contraction, you know, people spending more and then realizing they spent too much, and then changing their behavior and going into savings mode, and then realizing, well, we've saved enough, let's just go spend some. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is the in and out, the flow, right?
Yeah.
And all the government officials who like to pretend that they actually can control this are messing around with it, only making things worse.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. So I actually went and I looked up Bruce Lipton at brucelipton.com.
Uh-huh.
And I just had a couple paragraphs I wanted to read, which I just thought was fascinating as you were talking. Dr. Lipton began his scientific career as a cell biologist. He received his PhD degree from the University of Virginia, Charlottesville, before joining the Department of Anatomy at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine in 73. Dr. Lipton's research on muscular dystrophy studies... Dr. Lipton's research on muscular dystrophy, studies employing cloned human stem cells, focused upon the molecular mechanisms controlling cell behavior. An experimental tissue transplant technique developed by Dr. Lipton and his colleague, Dr. Ed Schultz, and published in the Journal of Science, was subsequently employed as a novel form of human genetic engineering. So this guy was really into the cells, right?
Still is. He understands it like very few.
Yeah. So in 1982, he began examining the principles of quantum physics and how they might be integrated into his understanding of the cell's information processing systems.
This is, sorry to hold you here, this is an important point. We must distinguish the Newtonian physical universe or model of the universe versus the Einsteinian and beyond quantum mechanical model of the universe.
Yes.
In the mechanistic Newtonian model of the universe, which to this day the Western medicine is dwelling on and insisting on, you know, they are just doing everything mechanistic. They just, you know, everything has to be physical. There must be physical proof. There's no chance that there's such a thing as mind over matter.
Right.
Or if anybody tells you that you could just laugh your way out of an illness, they just say that you're just having a problem. Anyway, just going back to the quantum physics then.
Cool. So then it goes on to say, he produced breakthrough studies on the cell membrane, which revealed that this outer layer of the cell was an organic homologue of a computer chip, the cell's equivalent of a brain, which is exactly what you'd said earlier. His research at Stanford University School of Medicine between 87 and 92 revealed that the environment operating through the membrane controlled the behavior and physiology of the cell, turning genes on and off. His discoveries, which ran counter to the established scientific view that life is controlled by the genes, presages one of today's most important fields of studies, the science of epigenetics. Two major scientific publications derived from these studies define the molecular pathways connecting the mind and the body. Many subsequent papers by other researchers have since validated his concepts and ideas. So,
however, hold on. He has been marginalized because the mainstream medicine likes to have static balance and the mechanistic response as their model. It's so much easier to operate within that. It's you know, the dynamic balance is so much messier. The quantum physics tells you that an electron can be in two places at the same time, and that the observer will determine where he'll see it. You know, things like that. Complicated,
yep.
Messy, uneasy things. And so what happened? Oh, hold on. So what happened is that his research was inconvenient.
Instead, another inconvenient truth.
Yes, yet another inconvenient truth. This is no endorsement for the nonsense about global warming.
That's a whole different tangent. We won't go down today.
Yeah, Al Gore has put the cart in front of the horse, and he just is annoying me to no end.
But this is a different inconvenient truth.
Okay. So, well, okay, let's just put this out for record. When Al Gore showed the graph of the world temperature and the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the world temperature was always ahead of the carbon, meaning you first saw an increase in the temperature and then of the carbon, not the other way around, which means first it gets warm and then more plants put out or something happens to put out more carbon into the air.
Okay, so setting that aside, we
go back to epigenetics. His research was inconvenient for the guys who wanted to spend big bucks on genetic research, getting the genome and creating the impression that your genes will determine your intelligence, your behavior, all of that nonsense that gives
the fact
rise.
That you have cancer is all because you've got this gene from your mom.
Oh yeah, and worse, Scott, that the color of your skin is somehow associated to your intelligence, or that your mother somehow predetermines the length of your penis.
Okay.
And any and all.
Right. So, but basically, to tie this all up into a nice bow is your genes are the blueprint, but not necessarily what you end up creating with your life. It's the architect, but the architect is never the person banging on the hammers and nails and putting the walls up and the roof up and everything else. That's done by other entities.
Yes.
And so it is in our life that we start off with a certain genetic blueprint, but then what we decide is what we end up getting. And you know, my youngest son is a great example of that, you know, as I was just thinking of this, because a year or two ago he was significantly overweight, and over the last year, after he graduated, he saw a picture of his, you know, took a picture at graduation, he saw it, and he says, "I'm not happy with the way I look." And he started to eat better, he started to exercise better, he started to go to sleep earlier, he started cleaning up his room and his living space, and just totally changed his environment, what he was putting in, drinking lots of water, eating very clean foods, you know, no more pizzas and burgers and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And now, I mean, he looks like someone that could pretty much go into a natural bodybuilding contest, right?
Oh, he's buff now, is he?
Yeah, he hasn't got the real strong definition in the abs, but I mean, wide shoulders, thin waist, looks great, and
awesome.
A massive change from before. So, you can't say he was genetically disposed to obesity.
No. This was exactly perfect example of what we're illustrating. This man has changed his behavior and started turning on very different cells. His body started burning fat for energy instead of carbs for energy. You know, his growth hormone kicked in and caused him to develop muscle and convert all the fat that he was packing into that. And I would speculate that his thinking has changed too. He now has very different opinion of himself and of his day-to-day and the kind of people that he hangs out with and so on.
Yeah, and one thing he said that was quite interesting, since you brought up behaviors, he said, you know, there was a period where I felt depressed. And he says, because I had to let go, like I was literally letting go of myself, right?
My old self had to die.
Yeah, there was like all these chunks of fat that I had to let go, and those were cells that were mine, and he says, you know, and after a while, I let go of that, and now I'm really embracing who I am and like myself. So it's absolutely amazing.
Yes. So you're watching these examples right in front of your eyes. That's typically what happens in a family. I have something similar going on with my two daughters, where they're taking very different approach to things and to reality, and getting very different outcomes.
Yeah. So that's cool, because from an individual's perspective, we can look at where we are and we can say, you know what, we can change. It may take, you know, obviously if you've built three quarters of a house and you decide, you know, you want to change it a lot, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, there's inertia and momentum.
Yeah, and so, you know, we're not saying this is easy or even necessarily simple. We're saying it's possible, And why wouldn't you live a life that's vital and full of energy and joy?
Right. So, Mark, to experience joy, you must be alkaline. Because if you are acidic, you will experience miserable, depressive, negative, uninspiring thoughts. I guarantee it.
Yeah. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to talk to you more about, you know, changing their life from a miserable, acidic, depressed, obese life to one of joy and vibrancy and full of health and everything working properly, what should they do?
Go read. Read at www.life-enthusiast.com. And if that doesn't fill your cup, then call us. 1-866-543-3388. We're here 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific time, and we are working on restoring vitality to you and to the planet.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.